and a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holiday, a season's greetings to you here from the College of Creation podcast. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are just two jolly old souls who love to homebrew items, spells, creatures, and features for D&D. And it's a special Christmas holiday special here.
Here we are, you all.
Michael and I decided we're going to make some holiday creations, some Yuletide homebrew.
Some Christmas subclasses.
Yeah.
And some other stuff.
Michael, you, of course, being a big fan of the Christmas season, as we have already found out on this show.
Yeah.
And the College of Creation is certainly no stranger as of yet to holiday-themed subclasses already.
You yourself made
a Santa Claus rogue.
Yeah.
And Seventh Mastery came on the show for our partnership subclass and came up with a caroler bard of sorts, which was delightful and wonderful.
Yeah.
So, we're right back in that holiday spirit, folks, and we hope that you out there in listener land are also bundled up with family, friends, etc., having yourself a wonderful holiday season.
Yes. Christmas, in my opinion, best time of the year. I love it so much. Actually, one of the first Warlock subclasses that I ever wrote was a Santa Claus-themed Warlock. And I've updated it about 1,000 times. And just this week, for this episode, I updated it for 2024 for the new rule set. So I would love to share that
love
with
that.
You.
That's fun. Yeah, I mean, that sounds...
If you would have me.
That sounds like a great time.
This is a Santa's Helper Warlock.
Okay, cool.
Your patron is a being of benevolence, having spent their enduring existence finding the good and bad in all creatures. Stories of old say that your patron traveled across time itself to reward those deemed worthy of its gifts. You are now a helper to your patron and must carry out the spirit of giving on their behalf. So we start out with some spells, now at level 3 for the Warlock. We start with Dancing Lights. They learn the Dancing Lights cantrip, and for you, you have 5 lights instead of 4. Additionally, you learn the following spells at level 3, 5, 7, and 9. Level 3, Detect Evil and Good, obviously.
Of course.
Long Strider, Levitate, Pass Without Trace. Mm-hmm. At level 5, Clairvoyance and Tongues, because you have to... speak with everybody. You're traveling around the world.
Gotta know what all the little children of the world want.
Yeah, you gotta listen to everyone. At level 7, you learn Fabricate and Conjure Minor Elementals. And at 9, Animate Objects and Modify Memory in case you get caught.
Great.
Mm-hmm. You can say, no, you didn't see anything, and slip back up the chimney. Also, at level 3, you learn the Spirit of Giving feature. This is where your patron trusts you to bestow gifts onto other creatures for on their behalf. The number of gifts you have available equals half of your Warlock level rounded down, and a creature can only hold one gift at a time, and gifts last for 1 hour or until used. The pool of gifts regains all expended gifts when you finish a long rest, all that normal stuff. This is a bonus action to use. And you have 3 options for gifts. You can give an Eldritch gift, choose one of your cantrips that you know, and the gifted creature can use that cantrip once. So you gift the gift of a cantrip. There is a specialist's gift. The next time the chosen creature makes a check in a skill you're proficient with, they roll using your modifier instead of their own. And a restorative gift. Once within the next minute, the chosen creature can regain hit points equal to 1d8 plus your Warlock level. So you are using your boons on other people, giving gifts out to your party. At level 6, we have the Spirit of Belief feature. Your presence helps others to believe in themselves just as you trust in your patron. You constantly emit an emanation out to 5 feet. Any creature of your choice within the emanation, they are immune to the frightened condition. And additionally, if a creature within your emanation fails a d20 test, you can spend one of your gifts from your pool to allow them to roll again. So you can give them a second chance if they fail. At level 10, we have the Spirit of Magic feature. This is just an expansion to the gifts themselves. You have the option to spend two gifts instead of one on a single creature at a single time. The Eldritch Gift allows the creature to use the cantrip a number of times equal to your... That should not be wisdom. That should be charisma.
Charisma modifier?
Yes. Nice. So, you know, up to five, depending on how much you're investing in yourself.
Indeed.
For the specialist's gift, the skill check is rolled with your modifier, but also has advantage. And the restorative gift, it's up to three additional creatures within 5 feet of the gift regain those hit points. So it's kind of a bloom effect with the healing one. And then at 14, the capstone, this is the Spirit of the Saint feature. Your patron puts steps in place for you to act in their stead. Your age can no longer be magically altered, and you gain true sight out to the radius of your spirit of belief emanation. And that tracks with your proficiency bonus, five times your proficiency. So at that point, so you're 25 feet true sight, up to 30 at higher levels if you play that long, of true sight. So you can see people for who they really are. Much like your patron would be able to.
And that's it. Sleeping, knows when you're awake, the whole bit. It's nice. It's thematic. It's also a functional subclass. It's not too wacky or out of the box in terms of what it can do.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty well put together concept there.
Thank you.
Yeah. And a cool little update for the 2024 adjustments to the Warlock. And a very support-focused Warlock, which is fun.
Very
and
support-focused,
rare.
Yeah. Yeah, very support-focused. No glass cannons here. Obviously, that is possible, but the main focus of this guy is just to stand back and let everybody else do the work, and you're just helping them from afar.
I like it. Well, that's a little bonus gift for the listeners to have an additional subclass this time around. You thought you were just getting two. Turns out you're getting three.
Also, tonight, Dan and I, we decided we were going to throw in a little bit of a preview to what goes on behind the paywall on our Patreon page. If you would so choose, you can subscribe to our Patreon at the $5 tier, and you can get a whole bunch of these. We're going to do a draft tonight. Christmas characters or holiday characters that we would like to see exist in a D&D game. Something that exists in the real world as a holiday entity that we think would fit well in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of Christmas movies. There are a lot of strange and out there ones. There are a lot that have been... transferred into D&D in some form or another, certainly.
Yes.
Stat blocks, homebrew, all that good stuff. What are the best ones? And I got to tell you, Michael, I'm going for the most effective team for an actual D&D adventure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going to be looking to try and gather up some folks that I think could brave even the most devastating of D&D dungeons and come out on the other side doing all right.
That is a good strategy. I think I will pivot and move to do that with you because I love that. Shall we roll to see who goes first?
Let's do just that, Michael. I have a 15.
You beat me. I have a 9.
All right. Well, for my first pick... For the rogue of the group, possibly rogue artificer combination, or at least arcane trickster of some kind, we are going with the incomparable Kevin McAllister from the Home Alone series.
Yeah.
he is going to be finding traps and setting traps of his own. He's an icon of the Home Alone and Christmas oeuvre. Love to see it.
I think that's a great number one pick, especially as a team building draft, more than a monster or a boss themed draft. I think that's great. I feel as though I should just directly counter that with a rogue of my own who was on my list before I was thinking this way. I would like to take Jack Skellington.
Ooh,
from Nightmare Before Christmas. He sneaks in to so many of those kids' houses, and none of them know. One of them actually wakes up and doesn't see him still. So he's a sneaky man. Ghost? I don't know. He's an undead, too, which is a cool creature type to have in your party. No blood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's he's definitely got some sort of racial benefits going on there for sure. I mean, survivability alone is pretty top notch there.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this is a little bit of a left field sort of pick.
Okay.
But I am going to add a bard to my group. Okay. Someone who. It just seems to happen, you know, you start playing the strains of a certain holiday tune and you can't help but everybody just sort of feel their hearts warmed and their themselves inspired. The classic, the incomparable, I said incomparable, Kevin McAllister, the classic Bing Crosby from White Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly my favorite holiday film is one that was introduced to me kind of late, but now has become sort of a necessary yearly watch. It's a strange setup, the whole movie. There's a farcical element of like misunderstanding at the center of it. You can't think about the age gap between Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney very hard. No, but what you can say definitively is that the musical numbers in that film are top notch. Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby both. But timeless. If I have to pick kind of who is the talisman of that film, it's got to be Bing with White Christmas in particular. Nobody can't sing along to that song. It's there in proof at the end of the film. He's going to get everybody singing, and he's a top-notch bard for me.
I agree with that 100%. I don't have a bard to counter that.
Hmm.
But I'm not mad about it. Maybe I'll think of somebody along the way to slot in there. I'm going to go in a different direction here. I was warring in my head earlier today as I was thinking about this between two ghosts for this draft. And I know I'm kind of already going in that direction with Jack Skellington. I don't need an entirely undead team here, but I do need to give these specific ghosts their flowers. The honorable mention, who I did not pick, Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life.
Beautiful choice. He's an angel, but...
Yeah, I guess he's an angel. Some otherworldly being. Love Clarence. I think it's so funny that he's just kind of like helping a guy out by really putting him through it.
Notably, he's not great at his job, though.
No, no. And I think that's doing part his of the best. Charm.
Oh, yeah. And like it makes the movie. Really he's trying. Not,
yeah.
He doesn't seem to be very proficient. Yeah. Although he actually kind of gets the job done.
He's along for his own ride. Not really knowing what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I'm actually going to go with is the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come from A Christmas Carol. I went with the spooky one.
Sure.
I think there is a lot of benefit to fill kind of the warlocky, kind of dark big magic, dark wizard type of deal. Mm-hmm. Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is my illusory caster, right? This is casting Gesh. This is casting.
This is phantasmal force like crazy.
Yes.
I mean.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. The personification of phantasmal force to me in my mind.
So we need the scary guy. And I know I already have Jack, but he's kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Goofy scary. Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is like really scary.
True scary. Like, yes, absolutely.
Truly scary. But we know that he's just doing it, you know, to make sure that Scrooge gets back on the right path.
Yeah.
It's all for a good reason.
Exactly. Good reason. Yes. It's well-intentioned.
So that's my second pick.
I think that's a great choice. I think that is the correct ghost. If you're going to just pick one of them, I think that's the correct choice. That's the most effective choice.
Yes.
Before you can scoop it, this may be a controversial choice.
Okay.
But we got to get Mr. John McClane in there from Die Hard.
I almost took him.
Climbing around Nakatomi Plaza on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve into Christmas Day. You know, I mean, what is he, a ranger? I think we can call him a ranger.
He did come up in the ranger draft over on the Patreon, if you want to check it out.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
He was mentioned several times. Yeah.
I think that he is a very valid ranger, much more of an urban sort of ranger, definitely has, you know, some pretty great stuff. I think an argument maybe could be made for Paladin. He definitely has sort of a vengeance paladin kind of thing going on for a little bit of it. But I do think the level to which he is not actually that dedicated to the cause as much as he is like getting these people just out of here because they're causing problems. You know, he's, what can you say about John McClane? I mean, he's incredibly proficient. He is a force of nature and, I love it so much.
I think that's a fantastic pick. I also have a ranger coming up.
Okay.
And now I'm wondering if I hold off on them because you already have that kind of filled and see if I can slip in. Because that was kind of a snipe. I was saving John McClane.
I figured it was going to happen eventually and I needed to get him on my team quicker.
I stupidly thought that it was going to either be John McClane or Kevin McAllister for you, and I misfired there.
Unfortunately, it is a both and situation.
Yes, yes, yes. So I think I'm going to hold off on the other ranger because I don't think you're going to pick him. So I'm going to go in a totally different direction. Everybody needs a wheelman. Everybody needs somebody with access to transportation, some type of network between cities. I am going to take in my third spot the conductor from the Polar Express.
Oh, dang.
Because he can just
great
show up on your street. He can drive that train right up in front of your house. It is invisible to anyone who doesn't believe in Santa Claus. Talk about a covert, hyper-fast vehicle.
It's an incredible pull.
Thank you. Thank you. Questionable CGI aside.
Yeah.
I think that movie is pretty good. I think it holds up from a story standpoint. And as a character, the conductor is just fantastic. So that is my third pull. The conductor from the Polar Express.
Nice. I like it. I think it's a very good pull.
Thank you.
And yeah, like you say, just can kind of be anywhere all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah.
It's good.
As an actual individual, not very powerful. But mm-hmm. we're using him for his transportation deal.
Yes. Now I'm like, oh, do I have the mobility on lock? So I've got, I think I have at this point, like pretty strong... like I've got a rogue who, you know, mm-hmm. a trap man, can easily get out of other people's traps, like really, really sharp on that side. I've got an incredibly proficient multi-classed, guy in the middle there. And I've got, you know, the charisma, the face. I don't have as much, magic. There is an urge perhaps to go for the big man himself.
Yeah.
Although I think I gotta say, I feel like that's a little bit cheap. I don't think anybody gets to have Santa on their team.
I have him on my list and I haven't picked him for that exact reason.
I think, you know, it just feels a little bit
feels weird.
You know, it feels like the easy choice and I'd rather go with the odder choice.
He's all knowing. He's omnipotent. Right. He knows everything.
I am going to pick for my team the Winter Warlock from the Rankin Bass special, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Mm-hmm. One of the classics, although one that I also saw late. It was always Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for me. You know, the classic with... Yep. I didn't even think of this guy, but that might be that's a good ranger pick, actually. What's his face from the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? What's that guy's name?
I'll tell you when I pick him.
Great. You tell me when you pick him. But, you know, that one's always classic. And then you've got, you know, you've got the heat miser and the snow miser and the other one, the year without a Santa Claus, which was
they're
also
further down on my
one
list.
For me.
Yeah.
But then there's, you've got the Winter Warlock, you've got Santa Claus is coming to town, and the Winter Warlock, I think, works because he starts off bad, but then he does turn good. He gets his icy heart melted by Kris Kringle, but he retains all of his powers. He's an incredibly powerful warlock. Vast wintry magical powers. I don't know what subclass this guy is, but he's definitely got some sort of magical powers going on. I think that he's my utility and support caster, and I think he's got some AoE cold damage going on too. So we gotta appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Winter
Strong
Warlock
pick
from Ranged Bass for me.
Solid pick. Solid pick. I feel like I have been backed into a corner here. I feel like I have no choice but to go with the character that I was going to use before. This was the Ranger pick that I was talking about before. I will take in my fourth slot Yukon Cornelius.
Yukon Cornelius, that's his name.
Yes, Yukon Cornelius. He knows his way around the mountain. He is adept at traveling across any terrain. He's also great at seeking out wintry creatures. Yukon Cornelius, he's a great pick. A solid fourth slot. Solid fourth slot.
I think that's a great Ranger pick to fill out the squad. I think we're down to, I'm going to say a five-person party is pretty solid. I think that's a good place to call it. I think I'm going to go with what I will argue is maybe an additional utility sort of caster type. The Great Gonzo as Charles Dickens in The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Strictly because he reveals himself to be omnipotent. He is a divination caster. He knows what's going to happen. This person is endlessly utilitarian in a D&D party. I would also request that his familiar is Rizzo the Rat, and that's what that is for me. That's my pick, Great Gonzo as Charles Dickens.
Yeah. Wonderful cap to the party. I think that's just what you needed. I was worried at first that I was all whimsical and you were just guys.
No.
With my fifth pick, I am also going to go in an odd direction. I think maybe this is treading a little bit on already covered territory, but I don't know if I can pass this character up just based on the lore behind it. I'm going to go with my final pick, the Sugar Plum Fairy.
I like it.
From the Nutcracker.
Yeah.
The lore of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Are you aware of this?
Vaguely, but please.
So the Sugar Plum Fairy has the ability kind of to impact the emotions of other people and the dreams of other people. She can influence the other creatures' dreams, which is very cool. Maybe also something that the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come can do. But I think more of a sneaky fae twist to it, maybe a bit more sinister even, probably a little bit more chaotic, and I need some chaos in the party. So I'm going with the Sugar Plum Fairy for my final pick.
She does seem chaotic in some way.
Yeah, sure. A little unpredictable.
I like it. I don't have a single healer.
But me either. I didn't even think about that.
Got zero healing on this group.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I think they're going to be all right. We got Kevin McAllister. We got Bing Crosby. We got John McClane. We got the Winter Warlock. And we got the Great Gonzo as Charles Dickens.
And I ended up with Jack Skellington, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, the Conductor from the Polar Express, Yukon Cornelius, and the Sugar Plum Fairy.
I would love to see any or all of these characters brought into D&D universe.
They're great.
That sounds wonderful to me.
Yeah.
What a delight.
That John McClane sniped it. That shot across the bow. You got me. Let's talk some subclasses.
Let's talk subclasses, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I already pitched one. I would love to hear what you made for our actual prompt this week.
I hemmed and hawed a bit. I was thinking about a bard, but of course then I remembered Seventh Mastery's sort of bard subclass.
Yeah.
That was very caroler and very holiday sort of focused. So it felt like I didn't want to step on any toes and try and adjust anything there. I thought about cleric. Sort of thing, something maybe around, you know, the necessary warmth in the cold time of year and that sort of thing. For a while I was thinking about druid, and I actually would really like to do this, but I did not have time to do the research because I wanted to make a druid that was more focused on the sort of, you know, traditions around the Yuletide and the solstice and things that are more in sort of a pagan space. From which many Christmas traditions have derived, but have changed significantly. But I think there's a lot of rich stuff to mine there, just in like the nature of Christmas and the holiday season outside of just winter. I feel like there's a lot of interesting stuff that could be done there with a druid, but I didn't have the time to do it justice this time around. So I decided to go back to a good old classic, and I made a artificer, the toy maker, a proper Santa's elf who makes toys at the North Pole. Great stuff. So Michael, you can open up your document here. And we start out with the toy maker's tool proficiency is in carpenter's tools. All of the classic depictions of Santa's workshop being strangely just hammers and wood. I don't know how you make a Barbie with that, but do your best.
It's the magic. It's the magic of Christmas.
Exactly. But you gain proficiency with carpenter's tools. You also gain spells automatically. At certain levels, you get color spray, find familiar. You get Durian's helpful homunculi, which is a fun little new spell that creates a bunch of tiny guys that help you out with a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You get spray of cards, hypnotic pattern, tiny servant, fabricate, Liam's secret chest, animate objects, and creation.
I love that.
And then the level 3 kind of a new featured ability is called Tinker's Toys. You gain new options for your magical tinkering feature, each of which can be imbued into a mundane object once per long rest. Each property has a base feature which you can activate, or an augmented feature that can be activated by a creature you give the object to as a gift. So these things work better when they're not in your hands. These things Perfect. Work better when they are gifted to others. Once a property of this list has been used, the object becomes mundane again until you use a magic action to re-imbue it. So your two options that you get here are a ragdoll. So as a reaction, you can use this doll to impose disadvantage on one attack targeting you. And if you use this as a gift, you can instead cause one attack to miss you entirely.
Perfect.
The jack-in-the-box is another one that you can make. When you roll initiative, you can choose a creature in the initiative order to share initiative count with instead of rolling. If you give this feature as a gift, the receiver, instead of choosing their initiative count before the first round of initiative begins, they can instead insert their first turn before any other creature's turn at any point of your choosing before the end of the first round, and that becomes their initiative count. So you can just kind of like say, I'm taking my turn now as a surprise. You know, the DM doesn't know, you don't know until something that's like, okay, I need to jump in here. Here I am.
Yeah.
At level 5, you get the little helper feature. So when you cast your find familiar spell, you can choose for it to take the form of a toy homunculus. If this familiar is within 5 feet of you when you cast an artificer spell that requires a saving throw, you can give one target of the spell disadvantage on its saving throw against your spell. So instead of, you know, a beast form, you can have it take the form of this little construct friend.
Perfect.
It's a little bit hardier than other familiars, but not by much.
So. That's the purpose of it being a subclass feature, though, right? It's not just the effect of a spell.
Yeah, it's a bit more useful, but yeah, it's a nice little bonus. And then at level 9, you get additional Tinker's Toys options. You can learn how to make a toy train set. So as part of your movement on your turn, you can lay down tracks in each space that you move through. And on subsequent turns, you spend half movement when moving through those spaces.
Nice.
If you give this to a creature as a gift instead, this movement bonus applies to you and any allies that you choose.
Perfect.
There you go. Yep. And then you can also make building blocks. You can use a bonus action to create one of the following structures, which remains in place for one round. If you give this as a gift, the user can build up to two structures before the object becomes mundane, and each structure lasts for 1 minute. So you can build a block wall. It's a 1 foot thick, 5 foot tall, 5 foot wide wall. It can provide cover. You can create block stairs. That is a staircase wide enough for a single medium creature that rises 10 feet into the above the ground. Or you can create a block bridge. You create a bridge wide enough for a single medium creature that spans 10 feet. So you get little utility blocks.
That's such a good feature. I love that so much. What a cool thing. Just like you said about the Jolly Old Saint, it is just whimsical enough to be fun and thematic and kind of evocative of a very specific type of holiday nostalgia, but also so useful. It is practical. It makes sense in a lot of different situations. Wonderful feature. Love it.
Thanks. There are four of these things. So feasibly, you know, because magical tinkering isn't a limited use feature, you could have made one of each of these and hand them out to various people in your group. Each one can only be used once per long rest, though. I'm considering changing that to short rest. I don't think any of them are game-breaking enough that, like, using it twice a day or something would be devastating. Then finally, at level 15, you get Creative Genius. This isn't really related to the other features. I just thought it was interesting.
okay.
Once per long rest, you can cast the creation spell without expending a spell slot and without material components, provided that you use Carpenter's Tools or Tinker's Tools as the spellcasting focus. When you cast it in this way, you can roll a d20 and add your intelligence modifier. If the result is equal to or higher than the DC listed on the table below, based on the materials used in the spell, the duration of that object becomes permanent. So usually when you cast the creation spell, if you use vegetable matter like plants and things like that, it lasts for 24 hours and it scales down from there to the point where if you create something of adamantine or mithril, it only lasts for, I think, 1 minute. The DCs here go from 10 for vegetable matter, 15 for stone or crystal, 20 for precious metals, 25 for gems, and 30 for adamantine or mithril. So it's possible. You only get one shot a day to do it, but you could potentially, you know, be making yourself some decent objects at a high enough level. Like I said, this is not holiday themed at all. I was just like, I am at a loss for what else to do with this, and so this is what you get.
I really like it. I think that this is it's nice and concise, but also provides options. We've talked plenty on the show about how we both love to give our players plenty of options, plenty of room to play and narratively create things that we wouldn't necessarily think of ourselves, and options allow players to do that a little bit easier. You can model this however you want. If you don't like toy trains, okay, well, you made a Hot Wheels set or, you know, whatever
makes
want
sense
your character to do. Yeah, whatever makes sense for your toy maker. I really like this a lot. And like I said, it's very evocative of very specific, like, Rankin Bass or elf long table in a workshop with elves with wooden hammers making trains and dolls and just shipping them off. I love this so much. It is very classic Christmas.
Yeah. Big fan of that vibe.
Yeah.
Thanks. How about you? What did you come up with?
I also hemmed and hawed a bunch this week. I really had a winding path to my destination. I thought maybe like a salesman bard that's trying to Black Friday people. I thought about like a reindeer rider, but that felt too much like a Beastmaster. I think we've talked about that before.
Yep.
So eventually I ended up with this. I call this the Advent Warrior.
Hmm.
And this is based on the concept of a Christmas Advent calendar.
Okay.
So the general idea here is that you just get a little bit of something all the time. Instead of waiting for one day to get big stuff, you're just getting incremental things over time. I don't know if it actually translates to something usable, but I do like the concept, so we'll see how this goes. For all the values and lessons that come along with the holiday season, none is more prevalent or universal than the practice of patience. Waiting for days, weeks, and months just to see what the jolly old saint wrapped up for you in his prettiest paper is a test unfit for the weak of spirit. Luckily for you, you don't have to wait. As an Advent warrior, you get a little something every day instead of one big something someday. Enjoy the gifts. So level 3. This is the Call for Blessings feature. This is the foundation for basically the entire subclass. Almost everything else is built around this. As you progress in battle, you continuously receive gifts. Whenever you roll for initiative, you can activate this feature by rolling 1d100 and magically receive an item of a rarity dictated by the table below. Your game master may have you roll on a table to decide an item, or might let you pick from an agreed-upon resource. At the beginning of each subsequent round, for up to 1 minute or until initiative order ends, you can use your reaction to roll 1d100 again. Each time you begin a round in this way, your previous item is replaced by the newest one, and when this feature ends, all items received fade away as shimmering dust. So you just have a rotating cordon of random items that just show up in your inventory. Did I talk about the randomizer fighter that I made a long time ago? Have I ever talked about that? It's one of my least favorite subclasses I've ever made just because of the structure of it. I was very new to homebrewing and I decided to tackle something with a D100 table in it.
Yeah.
But I always liked the idea of trying to fit something super random with items into a subclass. And I think this is the concise version of that concept. It's a limited thing. You only have these items for like less than a minute or maybe a minute if that.
Yeah, how long does this last?
So it lasts a minute. You can do it at the top of every round for a minute or until the initiative ends, so whichever comes first. A lot of combats don't make it 10 rounds. So you're really only talking maybe 4 or 5 items in most combats.
Yeah.
If that.
And it looks like it's weighted pretty heavily towards, you know, common
incredibly
and uncommon
weighted
things.
Common and uncommon. Yeah. So 1 to 40 on the D100 is a common item. Up to 65 from there is uncommon. Up to 80 is rare. 81 to 91 is very rare. 92 to 96 is legendary. 97, 98, and 99 is an artifact. And if you roll a 100, you can pick any item you want and you keep it. So if you roll a perfect 100, then you just keep the item.
Incredible. Are you automatically attuned to the item?
I think so. Yeah, I would think so.
I would imagine so.
Because you're going to want to use it in that combat.
Yeah, I don't see why it would be kind of a bummer to be like, oh, cool, this thing that I have no time to attune to.
Yeah.
So I literally cannot
use it. I enjoyed looking at it. Yeah, this is great.
Neat that it exists.
Also at level 3, we have the A Little Every Day feature.
You've been gifted a small box of minor boons. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can roll a d20 and gain a benefit until your next long rest. Your result dictates which benefit you receive according to the table below. So we're starting off with two tables right at level 3. No nice. Tables after it, though, I promise. On the d20, if you roll a 1 through 10, you gain 1d6 plus 1d6 to your maximum hit points. Little bump up at the top. 11 to 15, you gain plus 1 to a skill modifier of your choice, whichever one you want for a day or per long rest. 16 to 19, plus 1 to one saving throw of your choice. And if you roll a 20, plus 1 to an ability score of your choice.
Nice.
Yeah. A nice little ribbon on top of the chaos that is weapons roulette. Or items roulette. I shouldn't say weapons. I assume maybe for a fighter you'll have a preference for weapons, but maybe not. Who knows? At level 7, we have the wait and see feature. Guessing what's inside of a gift can be just as fun as opening it. When you roll for initiative, you can give your game master a guess as to which round the party will exit initiative order. If you are correct, you can restore one expended use of either second wind or action surge.
Okay, that's fun.
Just guess, because nobody knows. Just guess. There, with the caveat, like, hopefully your game master just doesn't right. screw you.
Yeah. This is definitely a shoot your monk scenario where, like, your DM has to, like, don't as a DM do the thing where you're like, oh, you guessed that it was going to be 3 rounds. I'm just going to add 1 to his hit points at the front end.
Oh, so a second wave, I see.
174 hit points instead of 74 hit points.
Please don't do that. Please don't do that to your Advent Warriors. Yeah.
Don't do that generally, but especially don't do that.
Also
to this
that.
Class.
Different conversation, though. Yeah. At level 10, we have the return and reuse feature. Sometimes the blessings we get aren't the ones we need. Once per round, when you roll 1d100 as part of your call for blessings feature, you can re-roll once and use either result. This feature can be used a number of times equal to your constitution modifier per long rest. Okay. So if you don't get something you want, just re-roll it, and that'll be fine. At 15th level, we have the Gifts Abound feature. You can hold 2 items received through the Call of Blessings feature at once. If you roll for an item while already holding 2, the item you've held the longest is replaced. So you bump out the older one if you try to roll for a new one.
Gotcha.
And at 18, we have the Curated Luck feature. You've been doing this long enough to feel extra lucky. You can add your fighter level to any D100 rolled as part of your Call for Blessings feature.
Oh.
Any result above 100 counts as a number between 92 and 99, your choice. Okay. So if you exceed 100, you don't get to keep the item.
Gotcha.
You got to nail 100 directly for that item to become permanent. Every other one is still going to fade away after the feature is done. So you're really trying to prices right it. You want to hit it right on
closest
the head.
Closest without going over.
Yeah. So you can add 18 to your result, 19 or 20. But that's it. That's the Advent Warrior.
I like this. I mean, something about it feels like... It feels a little bit like a Hades situation, right? Where every time you go through run of that game, you get sort of randomized boons. Like, you can choose between them, but, like, you don't get to choose which of the patron gods are showing up or whatever. Yeah. So, like, you kind of have to rely on the luck of the draw for whether your build is going to be super effective for that particular run. And it feels like this has that same sort of thing where, like, you know, you're just kind of rolling to see, hopefully for this fight, I get something that's like a cool build that will synergize well with other stuff that I have going on. And I think the handful of, like, the few times that you end up getting something permanently, like, making that thing, like, central to your kit and being like, cool, hopefully I can cycle through enough stuff that it works really nicely with this, like, sword shield combo or whatever it is. You know, the luck is going to decide if you, if your build can work out. And then it's really a system mastery test, right? Like, can you make these things work? Right. even if they're not necessarily ideal, can you swing it in your favor to make it make sense or to come up with a creative way to use the thing that you have drawn? I think that's cool and fun. I mean, it might not be fun for everybody, and it might certainly be something that, like, some people would be like, it's too swingy, and it would be far too hard to manage, both from a player and a DM standpoint. And I hear you, people, if you're saying that and screaming that into your podcast feed right now. But I say I would enjoy DMing this. I think I would have a good time pulling up a random table and just being like, great, I'm going to roll, or I'm going to pull up a random magic item generator and sort by legendary, and I'm going to see what I get.
Because I think I weighted it ish all right. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe it's too many common items. Maybe you're just pulling out
the Cape of Billowing.
The Cape of Billowing, yeah.
I mean, I think you could maybe slightly adjust the weighting, perhaps, but I think, like, you know, it's just a tricky calculus because, you know, these items aren't lasting for very long. Maximum 1 minute. So, like, yeah, cool, you pulled a crazy legendary hammer and you're gonna blow through this combat in no time, but like then it's gone. Then also, you know, even if you get something like an artifact, like some of the artifacts are totally unuseful in a combat scenario. I'm trying to figure out if that means that there should be some argument for being able to trigger this outside of combat, but just to like add some utility. But like, again, because you don't know what you're getting, like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, let's just look at wondrous items that are legendary. Some definitely useful stuff. You've got a cloak of invisibility, but then there's also the crystal ball of mind reading, which you can use to cast scrying or detect thoughts. I mean, detect thoughts could be useful. It sounds like a lot of fun. I do bet that you would run into some tricky bits here and there.
Yeah.
Specifically with things like, I'm thinking like the bard instruments, like would you allow that to be attuned because you aren't, or is that just basically a useless thing that you pull, right?
I mean, that's the luck of the draw, I guess. How do you, as a fighter, make use of a Revler's concertina?
Right, that is, I think, at this point, up to the DM's discretion. For me, for my money, I would probably allow it regardless because I'm like, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
You're only going to have this for a second. I don't know. I think that's fun. I think it's good at least for a one shot. At least.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, the I'll tricky part I think it's great. Would be you'd have to play a couple one shots because everything would be so different.
Right, for sure.
That how do you truly test it? But
you can't balance for a class like this, but you can have fun anyway, and balance isn't everything.
That's true. Not all balance is fun.
Exactly.
And not all fun is balance.
I also appreciate your ability to, you know, make a progression work.
Hey, thanks.
In a subclass, you know, I was thinking about like A Christmas Carol and like, could I make the whole story of A Christmas Carol take place through the progression of a subclass? But that was a tough ask, you know, go from past into
past,
present
for, future,
feature, and then a future feature, you know, but that's okay. You know, we have fun anyway. And I think we both still came with good things. I think what we're just learning is that this too ripe with possibility, and we'll probably just have to do it again sometime.
Yeah. I'll see you for more Christmas subclasses next year.
Sounds great. Let's do that. In the meantime, folks, we hope that you enjoyed this Christmas special. We did a bonus subclass. We did a draft of holiday characters to add to our D&D squad. And we wrapped it up with some brand new holiday subclasses. And what a joy. Take these as a gift. They are all available to you to use in your games if you so desire, or just to read, to download, to keep in your collection of things, to maybe bring into your game or to use as your own ideas in the future. We just appreciate you being here. Thanks for another wonderful year of the College of Creation. Michael, do you have anything to say to the people before we say goodbye for the holiday?
I do have something to say to the people before we say goodbye. I just wish you the happiest of holidays. I understand, while I love this time of the year, I know that it is not particularly a warm or friendly time of year to everybody. I hope that you can find some solace in chosen family this year. I just wish the best for everyone. We both do, certainly. I hope you stick around with us for another year. It's been wild that we've gone this long, and we're looking forward to just keeping on going, starting with next week with our spells that cost an incredible amount of gold. Hopefully you didn't spend an incredible amount of money
please
on presents
please
this year, because that's crazy.
I couldn't agree more. We wish you all the best, all of you out there in listener land, and to echo the bring it back to the Muppets once more. Wherever you find love, it feels like Christmas, and I feel like Christmas on this show. Thanks, Michael.
Man. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, listeners. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holiday.
Is that the ghost of Christmas yet to come?
Yes.
Perfect.